Greetings in the light and love, the most radiant one. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our topic is the Holy Grail, the search for love. Ah, don't you love it? And I was thinking of what to call the seminar tonight. I was thinking of, not that I'm going to talk about this, but I was thinking of that wonderful movie by the Monty Pythons, you know, the Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It's got to be one of the funniest things I've ever done. So I just have to share that little chuckle with you before we get launched here. And no, we're not going to do that version of the Holy Grail. But I think this is a topic that, oh gosh, who's not interested in the great mystery of the Holy Grail? I think all of us are intrigued by that story. So let's take a deep breath and just call yourself forward in layers and continuums of divine consciousness. See it filter down through each of your levels, like so many gossamer layers of pure divine light and holiness, pure love, pure wisdom, pure eternality. That is you, beloveds, from the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, and beyond the beyond. That which is the continuum of love, light, and sound. That is your true essence, ever one with God, ever one with the beloved. That is what we call forward and integrate, that we can discover together with each seminar more and more of how to live from our wholeness. And remember, the definition of wholeness is truly holiness. So as we live from the whole spirit within us, we live from that holy of holies that is the secret place of the Most High. It can only be found within. For all things in the world of form are destined to pass away. But that which transcends and yet imbues all form is that wholeness that we're moving into, that in truth, in highest truth, we could never, ever depart from, except in temporary storyline, which is called the great Leela, the great play of God, the great drama of the greatest dramatist of all, God. So in the many parallel probable reality lines in which we sing the song of the One Beloved, and we play in so many different guises and interact in relationship in so many ways with that one love. And yet there's one love, one lover, and one beloved taking all of these different forms so that every nuance of the play of love between the lover and the beloved, and that ultimate consummation where we come into that divine oneness and know ourselves as that. That's why we've come. That's why we have put on this costume. I was going to say Halloween costume, but it's not that dark. Actually, some of us clean up kind of nicely in time and space. But still, no matter how nice the outer packaging may be, who you are and what you are is so much more glorious. So, no, we can't have it all down here. Why? Because if you had it all down here, you'd never want to go anywhere else. So once you realize that life is a temporary 3-day carnival, you go in and you go on the rides and you walk through the funny house and you go through the spooky house and all this stuff and the Hall of Mirrors. But, hey, it's a 3-day fair. It's going to pack up and be out of town pretty soon. So you don't build your mansion in the middle of the carnival, in the middle of the fairground, in the infield. No. You're passing through. That's all. Everything here is scenery on a journey that we've decided it would be interesting to take. Yes, we thought, what were we thinking? Well, I don't know. But we thought that it was going to be very interesting to come down here to this particular planet, and I think you could say it is interesting, to do exactly what we're doing. For very good reasons that we've long ago forgotten, lost sight of anyway. But the point is that we're here for one purpose, and that is to find love, which is crazy, because in truth, we are love. We were made of love, for the purpose of love, to serve the function of love. Love is the beginning and end of a whole gig. The whole dance is a dance with the beloved. And having said that, we find ourselves in many cases feeling a great lack of the experience of love, real love. And the reason is because we look for it in the world of form. Don't you know that form is designed to disguise love? It misrepresents love because forms get old and wrinkled, and what was young and beautiful and fresh gets old and wrinkled and decrepit and yucky and disgusting at some point and diseased and does all sorts of messy things, and then it dies. So we know that it's got to be an illusion. We know that love has got to be eternal. Why? Because every single enlightened soul that's marched across the pages of history and before and after history have all said the same thing. You are made in the image and likeness of divine love. Love is a substratum of everything in existence. It's the very energy that we call cohesiveness and attractiveness in space. That which keeps the planets and the suns and everything intact. That which keeps the orbits in their perfect ellipticals. That which holds gravity so that life forms can flourish and be fostered on the given gardens of life. All of this is sustained and upheld by one thing, divine love. Well, we could call it other things, but let's just keep it simple. Everything is held together by love. Now, in terms of the time and space worlds, life is all about relationships. Yes, relationship. We were created for relationship. God created souls so that the experience of relationship could take place, so that there could be an extension and sharing. Because you know what? If you have love and no way to extend it and share it, that's not real love. The very act of love is self-bestowal. It is self-giving. It is the eternal offering of all that one is and one's highest and most divine components. That's love. So love always has an extension and a sharing action. Love is an action. Love is not static. even though love is the constantly recreating energy, the regenerating, reforming, transfiguring energy that is always lifting and lifting and lifting higher and higher and higher in frequency and perfection and at divine resonance. In fact, in the scriptures where it says, "Be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect," the original Hebrew word for perfection implies a constant unfolding. So that perfection is that extension of loving, which is constantly expanding and increasing. And we don't have a concept of understanding for that here, because often, because we're in a world of form and we tend to relate to things as real because they're static, or at least they appear to be for a certain period of time, we equate that with solidity and a form of security. We want things that are solid and real that we can touch and taste and feel and possess and keep in our orbit or aura or home for a period of time so that it can be, quote, ours. But anything that you can confine like that, you know, is temporary and is basically an illusion. And the same thing with love. We want to possess that loved one. We want it to be an extension of our persona in the flesh, our personality. We have the phrase arm candy or eye candy. And it's like that. These relationships become image candy that supports us in how we present ourselves into the world as the fiction that we dream that we are. Now, you can certainly not say that you're your human personality, because who you are as a baby isn't who you are today. Where did the baby go? Well, that was then, and this is now. Nor will you be the same person 10 years from now. In fact, you are, according to science, at least quantum physics, you change every single instant. You can't even actually measure it. You're constantly changing and reforming and repatterning after certain etheric blueprints that we establish in our energy matrix through repeated belief systems that hold us a constant. For example, you believe you're a specific gender. So you keep transmitting that belief and you appear as a man or a woman. Or if you're an animal, you keep transmitting the frequency of being a dog or a cat or whatever. And we keep transmitting this frequency that we're a limited human being that needs and lacks and must have and must acquire. But that's called illusion, samsara. And the wages of missing that mark of wholeness is that we lose it. It disappoints. It disappears. It changes. It vanishes. You can't even hold your body constant. The weight goes up. The weight goes down. The inches go out. The inches go in. It begins to sag and droop and stop working the way you hoped it would continue working. All of these things are subject to change. That which changes is not love. Oh, what is it? It's false evidence appearing real. It's that which appeared as a separation from love, which is like a temporary dream called Maya, Samsara, illusion. Now, I don't mean to imply that we go to some sort of amorphous, formless nothingness as our reality. But on the same token, I can't actually speak about what it is that we're actually ascending into, because it's been said that the mind of man cannot even imagine, comprehend, or conceive of what God has prepared for those who love Him. So, what we can know is that as we fulfill our divine function, as we come into that vibrational wavelength of pure divine love, of self-bestowal, if you will, that portion ascends out of the time-space continuum into that which is eternal and true and real creation. You see, this earth was not created. The original word found in Genesis, again in Hebrew, implies a reforming of something that had been brought into a chaotic state. So this particular globe of earth is a reforming of something that came under a dreadful catastrophe of some sort, which so marred it that it was in a state of void, blackness, and chaos, according to the scriptures. So it was not created, but remolded. And of course, if you understand that this particular appearance of earth, like all forms, is the reappearing or re-embodiment of a previous earth globe and a previous seed program of unfoldment. So everything that has a form within the time-space continuum goes through these cycles of growth and ultimate entropy and dissolution. But that which we are building within us is that immortal body of light that many of us have been studying and working to cultivate as far as we're able to. The good news is that we cannot work out that part of our particular unfoldment. The best we can do is make room for it. We make room for this greater thing to be done within us. And this is the work of course, the whole Spirit within us, or Holy Spirit, which is bringing that inner transfiguration, where that which is eternal, that which is the mortal, puts on the immortal, and the flesh puts on that which transcends and moves beyond that which declines. So, just have a sense of your being as being love, pure love. Just court the idea for a moment that everything you need, you have right now. You are perfect and you lack nothing. The lack is a misunderstanding, which as you bring in more and more of that whole spirit, you see it simply dissolve. That understanding comes from that heart which receives of that full wholeness of the divine spirit. That's another understanding of revelation. When you make room for the whole spirit within you, you see through the eyes of your heart. The heart, again, involves that innermost core of eternality. It's not the flesh organ beating in your chest. It's not anything that you could limit. If it is of truth, it has limitless application and vivification. Because truth, again, and life, and light, and love, and the beloved are all one and the same thing. So the one desire underlying every other human emotion is that desire to be loved. I think that's probably defined, perhaps, as human consciousness, is that need, that desire to have relationship. and to be loved. So the experience every individual yearns for is to find true love. I don't think that changes when we become light workers, because then we want to find our soulmate or our twin flame. Same thing, isn't it? We want to find that person that will complete us and make us whole here on this planet. But I just got through saying that you can't find it in the form. It's interesting. You can look and look and look and look to complete yourself in the outer world, and every single thing you try will ultimately not satisfy you. You know, the old saying is that we have a God-sized hole that only a relationship with God can fill. Well, that's true. And at the same token, souls who are not starseed, that are here as part of the indigenous humanoids from this particular planet, they need to learn how to relate in the human sense. You have to start with where you are before you can expand beyond it. So for some souls, they're in the process of becoming more human. That may sound crazy to some of us, but there are actually souls here who have earned the right to have a human form. Now they have to become truly human and functional within the parameters of human expression, which would include having a compatible life mate and establishing a home and bearing children. Now, many starseed, for one reason or another, and I won't say this is everybody, but many, you find them unmarried, and many times they don't have children. Of course, not in every case, but I have found so many of my friends, they don't have children, and many of them have never been married at all, and they might have a lot of animals or pets in their lives. And I finally realized, you know, that their attachment to their pets, these pets have become surrogate children to them. And I'm not saying that that's good or not good, it's just that the soul will choose what it needs for its lessons. Children, it's been said, are a 20-year allotment of karma. And when you have a child, you're responsible for that child for 20 years. And then, you know, they're adults. They make their own decisions and learn, like we all do, from making mistakes and learning from those mistakes. You do the best you can to impart to them the value systems and the things that have worked for you in your life. But beyond that, what can you do? You have no more right to try to control the lives of your adult children than you would be to inflict your opinion unasked for upon a stranger or anybody else in the outer world. Many times we're very, very intrusive in our loved ones' lives after they've already attained maturity and are responsible only to God for their own behaviors. So, again, in relationships too, you will marry because of unfinished business with a person. Now, I know many starseed are looking for their twin flames, but I will tell you this, that it's very, very rare that a starseed from a higher and more advanced world would incarnate with their twin flame. Why is that? Well, because Earth is a very, very, very difficult planet. We come in veiled. We have to be veiled to a certain extent because part of the process of bringing light into this dimension is to awaken from within the context of darkness. It's like you throw a dimmer switch that brings the light up gradually, bit by bit. Not only is this a gracious entry into the time-space historical period that you're choosing to enter into so that you don't disrupt the grid, and put too much energy. It'd be like blasting too much electricity through inferior wiring that couldn't carry the voltage. So you need to ratchet down considerably in terms of your frequency to come in here. Now, in terms of the twin flame, that part of you, which is part of your own soul, you don't have a separate part of yourself out there somewhere except in the lower realms. On the higher levels, you are your twin flame. And your appearance down here only takes separation into male and female after you pass out of the pure realms of spirit and you go down into the separation into polarity. That's the original meaning behind the legends of the androgynous beings that were one, and then the mythology, which I can't speak about too much because I haven't read about it much, but the mythology, the stories at least I've heard, is that at some point they separated into two, the male and the female. And of course, we have that story in Genesis with Eve being taken out of the side of Adam. So in the spirit realms, the male and female are one. I often say the Elohim are he, she, and she, he, depending upon which face of creative manifestation is manifesting through that particular being. They transcend gender, and yet they're the embodiment of the best, of the wholeness. In other words, they're in the divine wholeness. So you also are neither male nor female. That's why it says in the scriptures that when we're in Christ, there is no longer Jew or Gentile or male or female, that we become one in Christ. Again, Christ is a Greek word, Christos, that means that anointed state of whole love, that whole spirit is the Christos or the Christ within us, which indeed is our hope and our glory, and the author and the finisher of our faith. So that which we begin in faith is completed by the whole spirit within us in perfection. Again, in time, it looks like it unfolds slowly, but it's always done and completed in the higher realms. So again, your life as it unfolds sequentially here is but the repetition in slow-mo, if you will, slow motion, of what's already been consummated long ago in eternity. So you're bringing yourself back up to speed in one way of looking at it. You're returning to your original wholeness. You're returning to original union. You're returning to original divine perfection. You're returning from time into timelessness, from the unreal to the real, from darkness to light, from death to immortality. So it's a journey without distance to a place which in highest truth you've never left. Now, as we press ourselves in consciousness into the fabric of time and space, that is holographically replicated like I'm going to use the Sanskrit term, but it's too hard to go into that. But let's say there's mirror-like reflections of you impressed in every single quark, that's the smallest measurable so far, subatomic particles, a quark. And you're impressed in every single quark of existence within that particular time-space continuum that you embody in as a marker. In other words, when you're in a historical time lock, you're throughout that particular presentation of life, which accounts for all the possible choices that you might like to exercise in expressing the option you have of free will. each choice, when you step into it and commit to something, brings with it opportunities that unfold to you that were invisible before you opted into that as a commitment. You can't look at it from without. You have to step into it, and then it opens up for you. So as we become more skilled and masterful in the conscious direction of our awareness, we're able to edit time, splice time, take a stitch in time, collapse time, erase time, transcend time, pierce time, and do all sorts of interesting things with the illusion of time. We become the masters of that particular illusory appearance. That's why one of the names of God is Kalatitaya. In Sanskrit, that means the Lord of Kala, or time. So we become Trilokeshwara, which in Sanskrit means masters of the three worlds, of the earth, the midworlds, and the heavens. We have to master each of those levels as we begin the process of return to wholeness. Now, that means that everything that ever was or ever will be can be found within your own spiritual DNA. There's nothing in highest truth that you are not. You are part of all of it. Why is that? Because you're made in the image and likeness of God, which is appearing in and as all things, and yet remains also apart from, as the witness to all things. So God is both in creation and transcendental apart from creation. He is the wholeness of all of it. There is no place where God is not. And because you're part of God, there is no place on the spiritual level that you are not. That means you will find yourself everywhere, in everything, at all times, but because you have agreed to enter this time-space continuum that we call the Earth system, you have to make a commitment to identify with one body in one historical time period at a time. That is what lights up your awareness. It doesn't mean that you cease to exist in these other time references and manifestations. It's just because we have agreed to have this limitation placed upon our omnipresence for a specific learning and exploratory research field trip. So I think we will be much further ahead if we begin to look at our lives as a temporary field trip that we have come upon to research some particular thing that we are interested in knowing more about. So I've gotten off on a rather esoteric vein, but I wanted to talk more about love and relationships, so let me see if I can get back on that track here. So in that search for love, it seems like people generally fall into two categories. Either they're still hopeful of finding true and lasting love, or they have become so shut down because of repeated heartache and disappointment that maybe they're not looking anymore, but they're not looking anymore not because they don't want love, but because they have bought into the belief that for some reason or another, they're not going to find it, or they're unworthy of it, or in some cases, they have decided to enter a relationship or marriage in which they decided to just make do, hunker down and make do, and in some cases are living a life of compromise so as not to be alone. Now, these would be the ordinary relationships exercised in the arena of ignorance. Because when you begin the process of infusing yourself with your wholeness, you begin integrating your higher levels of conscious awareness, you begin to fill yourself up and fill yourself up and fill yourself up with this wholeness and this love. And when you are in that state, it's like you don't have that need anymore. But doesn't mean that you can't have it. Sometimes it's just nice to share your life with someone. It's a preference, but it isn't an addictive demand. It isn't a hole that you're trying to fill to make yourself more complete. So that's the difference. And when you attract a person into your life from the wholeness, then you can celebrate together and do the work of God together. And then it becomes a really wonderful working partnership. But you don't have that needy, codependent element in those type of relationships. Now, why is it, since we're made of love, by love, for love, and our only mission and function and purpose is love, expression of love, extension of love, why is it so difficult down here? Why is it so difficult to have that experience in any kind of a sustained way on this planet? Well, let me tell the story of how we came here. Now, this is a story. I relate to it because it's what I actually remember. Is it the only story? Probably not. But I find that we tend to have imprinted in our own DNA our own coming in some form that makes sense to us psychologically. So whether this is what happens to all of us or not, it doesn't matter. It's one of many explanations of how the impossible happened. The impossible, of course, is separating from God and wholeness to come down into fragmentation and separation. That's all a big dream. It's all a big illusion. But we bought into it, and so we also create these stories and legends to account for it and explain it so it makes sense to us psychologically. Gets us through the night, as one of my friends once said. So long ago, we stood as spiritual beings, as perfected sons and daughters of God, before the Almighty One, the great El Shaddai. And we stood before this Ancient of Days, who's also known as Sanat Kumara, or the Father, Abba. We stood before this great being within the High Syrian Council of Melchizedek, long time ago in terms of time. And the Most Radiant One came forward, whom we know as Lord Sananda Kumara, the second of the three Kumaras that came from Venus and governed this particular story of God, let's say, this planetary expression, this systemic expression. And the Most Radiant One called forth into the vastness of the cosmos the request for volunteers who would be willing to accompany him on a mission of love to this planet called Earth. Now, the mission required the brightest and most skilled cosmic co-workers, for the planet that was to be served has been known by many descriptive terms. This planet Earth is also known as Shan, Saros, Kol Nayar. In other words, it means the planet of sorrow, or the negative or dark child. It's also called the prison planet for laggard souls that failed to graduate in the previous cycle, and on and on and on. There are many, many of these various myths and legends and tales that are told of this planet that we now call home. So the call went forth for the strongest of souls, with sacrificial hearts, willing to give their all to love and serve and uplift this most unloving and immature and spiritually unaware of all planetary civilizations within the solar system. And that would be Earth. So the directive given to us was a very simple one. It's go to Earth and bring love. Manifest, express, be love on Earth. And so we were instructed basically to import divine love to Earth. And we were left free to choose however we would do that. That's why when people ask me, and they do, very, very seldom does a day go by that someone doesn't ask me, who am I? What is my mission? Where have I come from? Well, beloveds, you've come from love. And your function and mission is love. And you are love. Okay, doesn't that make me the same as everybody else? No, nobody else can do you. Nobody else can do your particular matrix of consciousness, energy, awareness, and manifestation of that love. So no, nobody is the same, even though love is one, the manifestations and expressions of that love require every single one of us in our individual expression. So, now, how do you express that love? Well, it seems simple to me. You do what you love to do. And if you don't love what you do, you learn to do what you do with love. Does that make sense? So do what you love or love what you do. But however and whatever you're doing, do it as the love that you are, as your gift of love. So that as you walk the earth in that attitude, you don't build up karma. That's what I speak about when I say we live in grace. When we're living the love of our truth, we live in grace and we're not subject to karmic law. The karma comes in when we act unlovingly to one of God's creations. And the immediate feedback that you get when you do that is unhappiness. We're only happy when we're loving and positive in our expression. The minute we depart from love, we will feel the hell of that misery that we feel, that guilt, that whatever it is, that is the hell that we put ourselves in when we do not act out of our truth and our love. So the true self is simply that manifestation of love. So be true to yourself and love. Find that love that you are and express it. Now, whatever you do with love is perfect. That is the most perfect way that you can express on the physical planet. That's as good as it can get, is love. So it doesn't matter how it turns out. If you've done it with love, you've done it in a way that is going to be a blessing. We don't have to even be concerned with it. If you live the truth of your love and express from your truth of your heart and your love in the most divine way that you possibly can, you will be walking in a way that's pleasing to that God presence that indwells you as the whole spirit. So, that was it, basically. We embodied upon Earth to, first of all, find the Lord of Love, our Master. And I've done many shows upon finding that way of grace that was embodied and exemplified by Lord Sananda Kumara when he embodied as Jesus of Nazareth. That set the Christ matrix in place that we were to pattern into and track, uses our tracking device back out of the negative realms of entrapment back into the highest of the heavenly divine realms. So that is how that's our homing device, is the Christ consciousness, that divine love, perfectly exemplified by the elder brother that came first, the Master Jesus. So we need to find our Master, who would be the Christ, the Lord of Love, the most radiant one. Once we found him, we find a way to join with him in ministry. Ministry means active serving. So when you live your life as a ministry of active self-giving and service, you are fulfilling your function. It doesn't matter whether you're a janitor or you're the president. Every single act that you do with love for God counts in the awakening and transforming of this planet and in embodying the divine presence. There's no greater or lesser in the kingdom. We're all exactly equal in the sight of God. We're all equal sons and daughters of God. So there isn't like, the greater and the lesser and this and that. Whatever you do, in the call of your duty, is valued equally according to what has been given to you. Some people take what has been given, and they kind of hoard it. They don't increase it, and that's not the best use of your gifts. Other people will be given a gift, and they'll just use it in limited ways. But again, that's not the real use of your gift. But the one that makes the best use of the gift is the one that not only uses it in every possible way they can in their own life, but they quicken and impart and share that gifting with others, and thus increase its brilliance and its value throughout the whatever their arena of expression happens to be. This is where we pass on, we disciple and mentor those people that are coming up the ladder just behind us. We mentor them. We're the way showers and the ones that assist them to come up higher and to follow in the rungs of the ladder that we have ascended through. That's the value. You become always one that shares whatever it is that you have attained. So, in this veiling process, we can't all awaken at the same moment either, because you see, if we did, not only would there be too much light and power brought into that arena, that time-space continuum, we would upset the balance in creation. So again, it's so important to have balance in your life. You need to have balance on each level. Not too much of anything. There's got to be moderation and balance in what you eat, exercise, your lifestyle, your hours of work. It's very important to take one day of rest every 6 days. Whatever your schedule is, take one day and rest. That's the prescription for good health and also for productivity. God created within a 6 day cycle. That day could be millions of years. We don't really know what that day is. But there is the principle of work for 6 days and rest on the seventh. Doesn't have to be Sunday. Doesn't have to be a Saturday. Doesn't have to be a Friday. But it needs to be one day. And in that day of rest, your energy is able to be completely regenerated and reset and restored, so that you go into your work week fresh and you don't tend to burn out. Also, there needs to be a limit to the hours of the day that we work. We shouldn't have 16-hour days. There should be a limit to how much we allow the world to eat us up. And I believe that we need to take conscious charge of that more and more, because if you don't, if you don't set certain boundaries and limits in where you place yourself into your life, you come to ill health, and you allow the world far more of your time and energy than you are meant to invest into it. Another thing is when you feel yourself getting stressed, it's very, very important that you realize you're overreaching. Stress comes to let you know you're overreaching the boundaries of balance in your life, or you are buying into the illusion of lack and need and separation from the all that is. So again, feedback. So we came here, and it's interesting because the light, when we brought the light into this planet, what happened was that it really caused a tremendous havoc upon the indigenous peoples of this planet, who began to react very, very violently. If you look at the reformers and the great men and women of God throughout the periods of time, the great scientists, the great inventors, the great movers and shakers who are honored today, but in their lifetime they were generally persecuted and hated, and many times they were tortured and thrown in prison and even killed because they upset the apple cart of the status quo of their times. They were the systems busters. And even though they only came to bless and to bring greater light, look what happened. I'm reminded of this mess we have now in our Gulf with the oil spill. That could have been completely taken care of. Hundreds, one of our most brilliant scientists from Venus, Nikola Tesla, gave over 5,000 energy devices that would have completely revolutionized the way we live life here. And we wouldn't be paying for energy. We wouldn't be enslaved to cultures that do not have our best interests at heart. We would not be in this mess today if we had just gone with the flow of what was being offered as a gift and had availed ourselves of it without the eye for profit. See, this mentality of having to make a buck and profit by selling the natural resources that belong to everyone on this planet, that, you see, is where mankind erred and went after the almighty buck. So anyway, as a little aside there, we are lifting the dolphins, we meaning the Ashtar Command, we are lifting the dolphins and the whales and certain species out of that area as much as we possibly can get them out. We're moving them and taking them to other parts of the ocean where they have still a healthy habitat. And we're also sending in some of our people to bring forward some answers that hopefully they'll listen and we'll be able to cap the oil. But this is going to bring a tremendous change in the way people live. And ultimately, it's going to work out really well because with the rise of water, because of the melting of the snow caps, a large portion of that land is going to have to be evacuated and people are going to have to move more away from the coastlines. I mean, this is one of the wake-up calls that's, with the increase of storms and everything. They're just simply going to have to move inward at some point, and now would be the point for many, many people. So, and different lifestyles. You know, I was thinking today, there's no reason in the world why some of the things that we did on Venus can't be implemented here, where people band together in communities and began to create self-sustaining communities amongst themselves, where they help each other to grow a communal garden and things that are owned as cooperatives, where people join together and begin to recreate their lives as a community of people instead of each person trying to survive on their own, to come together in groups and communities. Of course, this would imply cooperation and doing things for other people without, you know, an eye on the buck. But this is how the early pioneers survived. This is how the Amish and the Quakers and other communities lived very, very nicely and peacefully and beautifully, because they don't have a monetary-based system. They have a love and service-based stewardship community system, and it works very well for these people. So we might learn a great deal by our simple brethren in some of these communities. So, dearest ones, we're in a generation where there are many, many Christed souls on the planet today. As I told you when I was in Glastonbury, and the Master came to me in a physical form and directed us to go up into Scotland. This was the year he came in September, October. It was September of 92. And the spring of 93, he said a large group of Christed souls were going to be born in the area of Inverness in Scotland. And I would assume the British Isles, because he directed us to travel throughout the British Isles to fortify the Christ grids in those areas. But the point is, many, many great souls have come onto the planet, and they're in young bodies, and bodies that are growing up now in young their early 20s. And in fact, I have them in my own family. But these children are so shocked and outraged by the man's inhumanity to man that in many cases they're closing down instead of opening up. So it's very important to speak reality to these souls. They're, in many cases, they're not interested in our Earth's philosophy or the New Age or the church or anything we have to say, because they look at the world and they think, well, there's all these people believing this stuff, but the world's still a mess. So they tend to be a little bit cynical, a little bit skeptic for such young people. And what I have found is that they're very, very practical. They want to see results. They want to see the fruit of these things that we talk about in glowing altruistic terms. They're not very altruistic in that sense. They're more practical. They're very practical. It's like, well, okay, where's the beef? You know, or where's the fruit? You know, there's got to be some evidence that this stuff works, otherwise we're not interested. Now, unfortunately, they can become very depressed and go into such despair that they just begin to tune out the world. And in the worst case scenarios, they get involved with drugs or just a real profligate lifestyle, or worst of all, they commit suicide. So please, speak to these children. How would you speak to them? Well, tell them truth. Tell them that they're made for a mission, and the mission is to bring love to this planet and lift it into an age of greater humanitarian outreach and caring, that we're in a time of graduation, that there is a certain uprooting of all those things that have been in our society that constitute what we might say the entrenched darkness. It's being uprooted. Being brought to light. That's what the revelation, the apocalypse, means. Everything that was covered is coming up. It's being uncovered, revealed, shown for what it is. And then we have the opportunity to make a very, very different choice on this planet. Help them to understand that the choice for love is always a choice for that will be a blessing to everyone. And teach them how to discern. Teach them how to live beyond just what they see with their eyes. And, of course, the best way to teach is to be that yourself. If you don't live it out loud in front of them, they're not going to listen to you, because these kids are very, very insightful. They can really see see through any kind of duplicity, any kind of facade. They'll nail you in a second. So we have been called many things, which really defines our mission, too, in terms of what we're here to do. And we've been called the B'nai Or, or the Sons of Light. We've been called the Tzadikim, the Righteous Ones. We've been called the Mashiach, Mashishi, the Collective Messiah. Those are all Hebrew terms. We've been called the Group Avatar. We've been called the Sons of Sacrifice. And again, the male terminology means proactive, proactive. So the soul, or the positive spiritual self, is always defined as male because of its function, not gender. That's why God is referred to usually as the Father, although we know that the Elohim, again, were male and female, or he, she, and she, he. They were divine whole beings, whole light beings. We've also been called the bearers of light, light workers, emissaries of love, and the star-seeded ones. Why star-seeded? We come from the star, the sun star Sirius, the great Syrian high councils, as beings seeded from the star into the earth to birth the earth as a star. So that's why we're called star seeds. So, and then, you know, we come down here and we forget all that. And then with our own forgetfulness and veiling, when we feel that great shock, we and found ourselves in a world that seemed devoid of genuine love and understanding, that's where we find many of the young people today. They go into a form of a psychological shock. It's amazing how many of these young children are called, ADD. Sometimes they go into autism. They're almost always dyslexic, not always, but frequently dyslexic. And these are all defenses to kind of buffer and prevent getting too involved in the thought systems down here, in the educational systems, which are very, very dysfunctional and don't address anything that's real at all in terms of these children. So I encourage you to speak the mission and higher destiny over your children. Lay your hands on their head and bless them and begin to speak into their lives that higher calling that they've come here to exemplify. If you start that when they're very young, even if they push your hands away when they get older, you can still do it in your private prayer time, but you will have set in their minds irrevocably that imprint of a higher calling and destiny and purpose that they've come to fulfill on earth. You know, it's interesting, in those societies like the Jewish society and the Native American and several of the indigenous societies where they make a habit of blessing their children in the morning and in the evening, they lay hands on their children's heads and they bless them and they speak the word of God over them and speak their destiny into them. Their higher destiny, that these children absolutely excel and rise to great standards because they have that positive reinforcement and that blessing. So never underestimate the power of your spoken blessings over your children. And, you know, over your spouse and your loved ones also. Be one that calls forth that destiny, that higher destiny. And you can do it in your own life. You can prophesy and call forward your own destiny over your own life. Try it sometime. Just open your mouth, go out in some place where you're alone. And I used to do that all the time when I first came into this mission. I would go out in the forest and proclaim why I'd come to Earth, what I was all about, what I was doing here on Earth. I would call forward my own destiny. I had to do that to sort of integrate and anchor my consciousness at that point. But it definitely works. Now, having said all of that, bear in mind that none of us is fully here. That sounds crazy. Well, to the world it is crazy. But in highest truth, we've never left the higher realms. what we've done is extended consciousness holographically, so that at any given time, the best that you're here is 10%. You're only 10% here of your greater expression. And yet that 10%, when you live at 100%, brings the very kingdom of God to bear upon earth. But by the same token, get some measure of perspective here, and don't get all bent out of shape if you can't fit everything into this little tiny lifetime and this little tiny expression on the time-space continuum in which you find yourself. You know, get a broader sense of the life you're living. So we came to earth to serve this earth, not to be served. We came to be the love on this earth and to love this earth and her people, not to lose ourselves in romantic searching, to find love just for ourselves. We have come to be love. So as more and more of this true self, which is love, is able to infuse your physical levels, your mind, and your emotions, the love that you are upon these higher divine levels begins to fill you just like a chalice, and you become a chalice of living water. You are the dispenser, then, of the living water of life that flows up from within you by the power of the Holy Spirit inside you, the wholeness. It keeps refilling you. So you have this energy that keeps regenerating and regenerating and regenerating. So when you live in that natural flow, because if there is an outflow, there has to be an inflow. So as you tabernacle with the Lord and in your holy time, your intimate time with the Lord, you infill, and then you go forth and give it in service. And then you infill, and you go forth and you give it in service. That's why you must have a daily practice of quiet time with God. However you do, whatever you do in that time, to communicate in an intimate relationship way with the Beloved, that's what you do to keep that chalice full. Because you never give the dredges of the bottom. You always give it the overflow. So, getting to the grail. That true holy grail that so many are still seeking everywhere is you. You, yourself. Your upper chakras form what's called the chalice. A chalice shape that you're energy field takes, and as it's infilled with the Holy Spirit, it fans out in a chalice-like auric field called in the higher Enochian teachings the Zohar body. So you're one of the Zoharim, one of the advanced ultra-terrestrials that come from the sixth dimension down into this manifestation, and you become the Holy Grail, this holy chalice of the Christ consciousness. Now, in this world, when awakened and living the way that you were created to function as a living chalice or holy grail, you're that holy chalice like they have in the Catholic Church that contains the holy communion wafer. You become the bread of life, the Holy Communion. And the true communion is your coming into perfect union with the body and blood of Christ. Jesus said his apostles that if they didn't eat his flesh and drink his blood, they would have no part in him. And of course, he was speaking mystically and esoterically to them. But it says that many of them were offended and left him and didn't follow him anymore because they didn't understand what he was talking about. But again, when you are spiritually rebirthed, reborn, regenerated, the blood chemistry changes, and it goes from iron-based to diamond, silicone, golden, effusion-based. And it doesn't have that red quality anymore. The ascended blood is golden. And it's totally different. the body itself becomes crystal, Christel, Christed, takes on a crystalline, beautiful filigree crystalline composition. It becomes more than the body of flesh that we're wearing now. This is the transfigured Zoharim body that I'm talking about. So communion, Holy Communion, points to, as a symbol, that transfiguration, that union, that communion that we are building, that's being held within the chalice of the higher consciousness. So we become the living, eternal sacrifice as our whole life is offered up. And in that offering up, it is transfigured and resurrected and ascended into the very highest heavenly harmonics of divine celestial love. And that is the real meaning, the deeper meaning of the Holy Grail. So the story of the Holy Grail never was really about a cup. I'm sure the cup that they used for the Last Supper was long since gone. And it was actually never about the womb of Mary Magdalene either, as many would like to have it believe it to be today, which isn't to say that there may not be some elements of truth to the story. But what we're talking about here is the real Holy Grail, which can never be a physical one of. It can't just be one woman and one womb and one conception and one marriage and one relationship. You know, it's got to have a greater application and a greater sharing and extension. Otherwise, what's the point of it? In this world, we kind of like to define speciality. But as the Course in Miracles points out, that speciality is actually a form of hatred that is a barrier and defense against the joining and the union of oneness that we're actually designed to embody. I know many of my friends believe they're Mary Magdalene. There, many, many, especially since the Da Vinci Code came out. Now, that's not to say that you can't be operating under the mantle of the Mary Magdalene consciousness, because it's been said that she was the greatest disciple, really, of the Master Jesus, at least in the Gnostic scriptures, for the simple reason she was the only one that was really educated. And she apparently was a woman of considerable wealth, not a prostitute, but a woman that was highly born and of considerable wealth, and because of that, she was able to travel. She didn't have to make her living, but she could travel and, in a sense, help support the mission of Jesus. And she was a very devoted disciple and a higher level of initiate than the others. I think she was the highest level of initiate amongst those that were with him at the time. So everyone gets to be called the beloved bride of Christ. Everyone. Everyone gets to be the divinely betrothed bride of Christ. Whether you're in a male form or a female form, in terms of spirit, everyone that's in a body is considered female. God is the only male in the understanding of the spirit. Now, we all get to birth the Christ child. The Christ child within the Holy Grail is you. You're birthing yourself. You're birthing that higher divine Christed nature yourself. Now, what about the Merovingian bloodlines and the Sang Real? Was there a royal bloodline originating from the union of Jesus and Mary Magdalene? I think this is a really, really interesting story. One that's captured my interest as well as just about everybody else's. Back in the 1980s, I read that book called The Holy Blood, Holy Grail that kind of started and launched this whole speculation that ended up in Brown's book, The Da Vinci Code. And I enjoyed it very much. And I took it as I believe we all should, simply as information, neither to be believed or disbelieved, but pondered, you know. It's like, well, what if? That's an interesting point of view. I wonder if it has any element of truth. So when you hear these phantasmagorial stories, you have to ask yourself a few questions here. Does it lead to love? Does the story lead to love? If it leads to just controversy and doubt and confusion and all of that stuff, it's not leading to love, it's leading to deception, because deception always causes that doubt. You know, it turns you away from faith. So if it's not a faith, it's not going to lead you to love. Is it for the benefit of everyone? Does everyone benefit from this information? Well, obviously not in this case, because it points to some people that it says may be closer to Jesus than others. So what does that do? It makes you feel like you're lacking. Oh, if my name isn't Sinclair, if I'm not St. Clair, if I'm not this, I'm not that, if I'm not the Magdalene, if I'm not Sarah, if I'm not involved in this Sangreal, then I'm an inferior person. Then I don't have gifts of healing. Then I don't have supernatural powers like Jesus. Then I'm, you know what I'm saying? This is not a good thing. This separates again and causes some people to feel, superior and others not to. But by the same token, who's benefiting from this? Who actually ends up benefiting from this kind of information? So it's got to be a blessing and benefit everyone. Otherwise, it's not leading to love. It's not big enough. And who benefits by the information? I watched a really interesting documentary on that, the search for the real, I don't remember the name of it, but it was about the Da Vinci Code and the research behind it. And it pointed to an actual group within the high levels of the Vatican that apparently, supposedly, have connection with that information. So again, it looked to me like part of the Illuminati, like a setup, you know, the Illuminati intrigue setup, to grab power. And I'm not sure why or what the agenda is, but I could see that it was being used to hide. And again, that which is of the light comes to light. It doesn't have to be hidden. It isn't a secret thing that has to be hidden from people. If it's of Christ, Christ lived his life very much in the open and taught in the open, and everything he did was there for anyone to see however they wanted to see it. So I think it's very interesting and something that it perhaps pays to be informed about, because it's capturing the interest of so many people today. The real royal bloodline is the Sangreal, the real blood of the Christ, is in that regenerated, transfigured life where you literally become the Holy Grail and give birth to the Christ. And then you indeed are of the Sangreal. You're of that kingdom and that royal dynastic lineage that we call the Way, the Way of the Eternal. So also when I was living in London in 2000, I went to hear Sir Lawrence Gardiner, who is the foremost author. He's written about 6 books now on the Merovingians. And he also had done all the mathematics. So if, say, for example, there was one child from Jesus and Mary, and that person had children, and then so on and on and on and on, he figured out that all of humanity by now would have that blood in them, just based on mathematical speculation. So I thought that was a really good place to point that research, because, again, he said that we all have that divine blood within us. So I thought that was good. Was Jesus actually married to Mary Magdalene? I don't think anybody actually, for a fact, probably knows. Because it's interesting with Jesus, just about, because he's multidimensional, and they say that if every book was written about Jesus and everything he taught and everything he said, there would not be enough room on all the earth to contain it. So, whatever he did after he resurrected his body was his own business. He could have married Mary Magdalene. He could have had children. He could have done any number of things. In fact, if he had been married, I'm very certain it would not have been omitted from the scriptures, or the apocryphal scriptures at least, or the Gnostic scriptures, for the simple reason that it was expected that a man of his age would be married in the Hebrew culture. It would be very unusual if he wasn't. So whether or not he ended up marrying Mary Magdalene after he had completed his mission on the cross and resurrected his body, who knows? But again, there would have been certainly nothing wrong with him doing that if that indeed is what happened. There would have been nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Absolutely nothing would have made, actually, more sense in a certain way. But another thing that you all need to always remember, because everything down here is just exactly what we want to make it, no more and no less, whatever you tend to believe, you will always produce and project the evidence to back up your belief system. In the Bible, it says, "It is done unto you as you believe. For as a man believes in his heart, so he is." That's why our belief systems are so important, to pick the highest, the purest, the most positive, the most beautiful, the most edifying, the most Christ-like that we possibly can, because you're going to wear your belief. It's going to be manifested in your environment, because that's why you were given free will, to, learn to become a positive, responsible co-creator. So I find it very interesting myself to periodically adopt different belief systems to see what would happen. I love to play in consciousness and to see what would happen. When I was very young, I was in my first group, my early 20s, and everybody in that group believed in what they called the negatives. And the negatives were always doing this, and the negatives were doing that. And you know what? They were always having negative experiences. Well, I had just come from a positive thought system, and so I didn't buy into that belief in the negatives, and those things never happened to me. And one time the group got around me, and they said, "How come you don't seem to be affected with these things? You know, these things don't happen to you. You don't seem to experience these things or have these dreams." I said, "Well, quite frankly, because I don't want that in my thought system, and so I don't believe it." And they thought that was so strange, because, you see, they believed that these things existed. So it's very important to select, be discerning in what you adopt as a belief system. Make certain that it produces love in your life. Again, that's a blessing. That it blesses you and it blesses others, that it's something that is going to work for you in a harmonious and positive way. Now, I noticed that when I was working in different thought systems, that my dream life would shift to support that inner choice of focus, along with the symbols and the imagery and the things that I would experience in my day-to-day life. Very, very interesting. And I've had fun with that. I've enjoyed that. And it also proves that we live in a unified field which is molded by our consciousness and our focus and our intention. So today I believe that all of it is true and none of it is true. Because in these lower dimensions of matter, energy, space, and time, the messed universe, we're just passing through all of these labyrinths of mental projections and weavings of mind and feeling. And it's all experiential. So I'm enjoying the journey. I'm enjoying the adventure into the unknown so very much. And I believe many of you are as well. So I think a good approach is to be spiritual scientists on a research mission, examining the evidence and seeing to whether or not it leads to love. If it leads you to love, if it leads you to Christ, then it is worthwhile. And if not, it's worthless, so you don't need to do anything about it. Course in Miracles. Nothing real is threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. So that, I think, is a good place to wind up our program for this evening. Make certain that your beliefs lead you to greater love so that you can truly live your life as a blessing, so that you are blessed yourself and you bless everyone and everything that is in association with you. And if you do that, if you choose the way of love, you'll be right in the heart of the beloved. And you will be living from your wholeness, and you will know that you are the Holy Grail. So let's go out chanting. Let's do Yeshua. Deep breath. Yeshua. Yeshua. God evening, and God bless you, and God willing, I'll be with you next week. Adonai.